You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's the Friday News Roundup. Joe Biden signs a climate and health care bill. Liz Cheney loses big in Wyoming. And Rudy Giuliani appears before a Georgia grand jury. Latest on those stories and more today at 6 on 1A+. Now, economists are warning of a potential retirement crisis looming in the U.S. Many Americans don't have employer-sponsored retirement plans and find themselves short on savings. And that was happening even before the pandemic. Add in 2 years of pandemic disruption, plus inflation, fears of a recession. It all leads to big concerns about a big group of baby boomers on their way into retirement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are your retirement savings, your retirement plans looking? Are you worried about having enough for retirement for you or maybe for a parent? If you're already retired, how did the process go for you? If you're younger, have you found ways to start saving yet? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on labor and retirement security. She's an economics professor at the New School in New York. Her books include How to Retire with Enough Money and How to Know What Enough Is, and Rescuing Retirement, a Plan to Guarantee Retirement Security for All Americans. Teresa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so glad. This is really an important topic.
It's a topic you've been following for years. Can you set the stage, the problems we had before we even got to the pandemic? What were things looking like?
Yeah, so before we got to the pandemic, we had 40 years of people hoping that the do-it-yourself system would work. We had 40 years where people were either depending upon their 401k, taking a little money out of their 401k, not having a 401k. And we watched the Social Security system kind of cut back benefits because they were raising the retirement age. You could get full benefits. So we were crossing our fingers and doing lots of forecasting about what a fully mature, what I call the do-it-yourself or the 401k modeled kind of retirement plan would look like. And so was the rest of the world, because the United States really went far on the limb to say, hey, in the 70s, we're going to cut back on Social Security, we're going to cut back on these defined benefit plans, and we're going to introduce, it's really started in the beginning of the 80s, these voluntary plans where your employer can provide them or not provide it. You can join it or not join it. And then we'll give you tax breaks for it, you know, if you're in the higher brackets. So we've now had 40 years to look at that. And before the pandemic, stock market was doing pretty well. And older workers who had a college education were keeping their jobs. So I was really concerned about what I call the tale of two retirements, that one group might be sailed into retirement, keep their standard of living by working a few more years, but others were not able to keep their jobs. They were being pushed out, and their retirement savings and Social Security was not going to be enough to keep their living standards. So we were already forecasting middle class, so I'll do this real slow and I'll stop talking, that 40% of middle class older workers, you know, on the verge of retirement, would be what we call downwardly mobile when they retire, that they would have to downsize, they may even have to live in poverty. And then the pandemic came.
Yeah. And then obviously the pandemic did a lot of things to the economy as it affects retirement planning, especially for this generation coming into retirement. What were some of the biggest impacts?
Yeah, so a lot of people looked at a lot of aspects of the pandemic. Since I'm obsessed, you know, with retirement and older workers, I just had my eyes on the 38 million workers who were over 52 but yet not had retired, and I watched to see what happened in April, in May. Remember those dark days of 2020, and we saw a big upsurge in what we call excess retirements. You know, that we knew that about a million people every 9 months or so would retire. They'd be pushed out or they would voluntarily leave. But we had a pretty good sense of what the normal trend was. And we saw a huge uptick in people saying that they were retired. And we then probed to see whether or not it was voluntary or involuntary, because you can kind of tell if it's voluntary if you just ask a few more questions. And we found that which is like, did you retire before your boss laid you off? You know, those mm-hmm. kinds of obvious questions. Did you retire because you felt you had enough money? And we were finding the vast majority of people who told government surveyors that they were retired were really unemployed. So we saw what we might call in the press retirement. What I saw was just extra unemployment. And people with the least education, with just high school degrees, were much more likely, twice as much more likely to be involuntary retired.
What led, I mean, part of that might be service sector jobs that took an early hit from the yes. pandemic. I also, what yes. you know, there's got to be some people who are worried, do I want to go back if I'm in an at-risk yeah. group to this job? Yeah. Is that part of the involuntary-ish retirement story? But,
you're right. You asked like the best questions because we spent 8 months really investigating whether or not it was kind of a supply problem or a demand problem. Was the fear of the virus and the way it affected older people, not younger people, really driving this excess trend? And we concluded it was absolutely not. That if people could get a hazmat suit and go back to work, they would, because they really needed the money. What we saw instead were concerns of employers that they would have expensive older workers on their hands. Remember, this was the end of the Trump administration when a lot of labor law regulations were not being enforced. So it was this kind of golden moment where employers could push out older workers without a fear of a age discrimination suit. Older workers are often more expensive. And because this was a medical emergency, employers were really afraid of the extra cost of the medical care.
Okay, so for this group, as you mentioned, often lower education, yeah. maybe lower paid jobs, yeah. I'm guessing lower retirement yeah. savings, therefore leaving the workforce earlier. Well, that sounds like a recipe for really bad. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it was really bad. You know, and it was, you know, and it was because it was kind of a once in a lifetime chance these employers could push out their older workers. So what does it mean? Let me count the ways. Let's talk about finances. It means that if they have any savings, they'll draw down on their savings faster than they'll cut their consumption, because it's really hard to downsize. It's kind of expensive to downsize. So they'll draw down on their savings they were planning to spend, you know, in their 60s, they're now spending in their late 50s. It also means that they're planning on taking their Social Security earlier, you know, at 62 when you get the lowest amount, rather than kind of waiting till 64, 65, and if you can, you know, up until 70. So they're taking a lower Social Security, lifetime Social Security benefit. They're drawing down on their savings. They may be going into debt, though we didn't see big increases in debt, but they also may not go to the doctor. And that means when they hit Medicare age, you know, they're going to come into that program much sicker than they would have been if they had maintained their health insurance. So a lot of the pain of this early retirement will be felt a little bit later. I think the immediate effects have been shame and isolation.
Talking to Teresa Ghilarducci, economist, expert on retirement, looking at looming retirement problems, already existing retirement problems when it comes to savings for a lot of people. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, with your experiences. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hi, good afternoon from northern Wisconsin. It's a beautiful day up here. I'm 62. I'm 62. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the topic because I have a plan. When I graduated from college, I had a speaker tell me, you know, you might just plan on different careers in your lifetime, that your life might be more fun changing from one industry to the next. So that's kind of what I did. And I have a Teamster pension in my back pocket. So when I retire, I'm going to get that pension at 65. So I'm planning to work till I'm 65 before I collect Social Security. And I feel pretty confident about my income at that time. But when I look back on my life, I think it's been pretty fun.
Jeff, glad you had fun along the way. Jeff. But Teresa, I think there's a lot of people out there, maybe the younger more so, saying, what's a pension?
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say congratulations, Jeff. And I, what a good personality you have. Like what, and what a good head you have for finance. What I heard was that you made sure that you had a pension. You know, your and a union pension is often some of the better pensions because you have a whole union behind you always trying to make it better. Now, the are you in the central states? Because that's had some problems. But if you're not in the central states, it's probably a pretty good union plan, and it's insured by the federal government. So congratulations. You're 62. You have 3 more years. You sound like you don't have any health problems and that you might be in a job that you enjoy. And I suspect that you'll make it to 65 and you'll be fine. You will have to scrutinize your Medicare Advantage kinds of plans. Make sure you do that well. And keep up your health. What I always like to tell people in situations like you, where you don't have to do really that much more, but to make yourself better, pretend you're a diabetic right now and just eat like a diabetic would. Low sugar, you know, do your exercises. Because if you can stave off that disease, 50% of people, you know, in the 60s have it, you can save a lot of money. It's a lot more fun, but you can also save a lot of money because diabetes is expensive. So I don't have much to, I don't have much advice for you. I just have a lot of congratulations.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. We're talking to economics professor Teresa Ghilarducci from the New School in New York, author of books about retirement, looking at retirement crisis. A lot of people with little or no savings as they near retirement. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, if you have a question for our guest about dealing with retirement, if you have thoughts on bigger picture solutions for these problems, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Teresa Ghilarducci, economics professor at the New School in New York, expert on retirement, with us today looking at the causes of, potential solutions for, an impending retirement crisis in the U.S. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, experiences, questions. That's 800-642-1234. Teresa, before we go back to our callers, and I know you've written about kind of what individual people can do to prepare for retirement. Yeah. You've also looked at big picture systemic solutions. Do you want to hit us with some of the main ones you'd like to see?
Yeah. No, I think this is the time, and we have a Congress that kind of works for once, and so maybe there are ears to hear, especially in your Wisconsin senators. This is a time we should really consider lowering the Medicare age. Remember those people that lost their jobs, also lost their health care. Obamacare is pretty expensive for older workers. They're going to be sicker by the time they get to Medicare. Studies have shown that if we lower that Medicare age, you know, to 60 or even 50, you do two things. One, you make sure that people are as healthy as they can be as they get older. It actually saves money. But you also help employers get excited about hiring an older worker because if Medicare is first payer, the health insurance for an older worker is not as expensive as it is now. Right now, a kind employer, you know, one that's not bigoted, has to think twice about hiring an older worker because the health insurance costs are so high. So we should really lower the Medicare age and make it first payer. The other thing to do is to really fix our pension system. If anyone has been following me for my whole life, I have been incredulous about why we don't have a pension system that everybody has on top of the Social Security system that everybody has. You know, Social Security is great. It's insurance. You pay for it by premiums. The younger people pay for the older people. But we also have a system that only some people have where they save. That money gets invested into the economy. And by the time that person retires, they can draw down on those investments. And when that works, like Jeff with his Teamster pension, it works. But if people don't have those savings accounts, we can't have that virtuous circle of helping the economy and helping somebody. So I've been advocating, and I think we might be close in the next year or so, to have everybody at work have two kinds of pensions, the Social Security and a defined contribution plan that has what we call characteristics of that old pension system, because you can take it out only when you retire and it lasts for the rest of your life. you know, this isn't that hard. It really isn't that hard. We also need, I've been working with a lot of people these last 2 years because the pandemic has laid bare how awful our unemployment insurance system is for older workers. Older workers take twice as long to find a job if they've been laid off. And so those unemployment insurance benefits should last twice as long for somebody over 40 or 50. And our training programs are really oriented towards younger workers. We have a lot of people like Jeff who have a lot of wisdom and experience, but their industry kind of, fell apart, you know, beneath them. You learned that in Wisconsin. I lived in Indiana for a long time. These are really skilled industrial workers that don't have an industry anymore. And so to retrain them for other jobs that require the same kind of judgment and dexterity is vital, but we do not have a system like that in this country. So there's a range of policies that make work for older people good and make pensions for the people who need to retire and want to retire better. And we just have not paid attention to those needs because it's a slow-moving crisis.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jason is with us in Elkhorn. Jason, hi.
Yes, good afternoon from cloudy southern Wisconsin.
Okay.
What's your question, Jason?
So my question is, my first employer did not offer a 401k until I had been there for probably 10 or 12 years. Wow. So I feel like I'm trying to make up for lost time. So yeah. My question is, I've lived pretty tight, kept the original house that we bought and did not buy a new home every time we got a raise. And instead, we took our raises and put them into our 401k. So I'm to the point now that I'm saving roughly $25,000 a year into my 401k. Is this the right thing to do? Or should I be doing something different with my money?
Jason, how old are you?
I am 47.
And how old is your wife, if you have one?
She is also 47.
And she has the same strategy? She has a pension.
No, that's actually great. She has a pension.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make up for what I didn't save.
Gotcha, Jason.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to put you on the cover of my next book, that you are doing exactly the right thing. Not only because you are paying attention to your lifestyle and you're satisfying, you're not maximizing, you know, all your spending, you're satisfied with what you have. You also realize that you lost a lot in those first 10 years in your 30s, which is we should go arm in arm and say to 30-year-olds, hey, you know, we don't give you very much, but you do have time. So you did lose a lot of buildup in those 10 years. So you're making up for it. You're also putting your money in a tax sheltered plan as well as your wife, even though it's kind of set up for her, because you get a lot of savings by that money not being taxed going in, and it's not taxed while it's building up. I spent last week with a very smart PhD historian who teaches at a prestige university, convincing him to save in his 401k because he was leaving so much money on the table, and you're not doing that. The only place you probably could improve is to be very diligent about where your 401k money is being invested. And I would suggest that it be invested in indexed funds because you can save money on fees. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your portfolio?
We don't have too much time left, actually, and I want to get one more caller in. Jason, thanks for calling. I hope that helps. Jim is with us now in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Great show again. Hello. Can you speak to the cap on Social Security and why the politicians are just I don't know what you want to say, recalcitrant? They just won't raise the cap. Thank you.
You know what? Yes. So what Jim is talking about is that people who make $13 million a year, big executives, Bill Gates, you know, makes $50 million a year, are treated by the Social Security system as if they make about $140,000 per year. And they pay their taxes for Social Security, the first day of New Year's Eve. If we raise the cap And those $50 million executives paid their Social Security tax on $50 million, just like they pay on their Medicare. We would not have any kind of financial crisis in Social Security, and we could even expand benefits. I think, Jim, that we have a coalition in Congress among Democrats, and if they keep the majority, that we will see that cap raised and more money come into Social Security to secure Social Security. So I'm more optimistic about this than I've been in 35 years.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And just our last minute or so, Teresa, for somebody who's approaching retirement and is feeling a sense of panic, I know everybody's situation is going to be different. Can you give them some starting points to start to try to tackle that?
Yeah, I will. Please try to keep your job as long as you can, and just until this spate of inflation is over. And the older you are before you collect your Social Security or draw down your savings, you're going to be better off on the margin, but you'll be better off. So individually, if you can keep your job and keep saving, you'll be better. Every little bit helps. Really, don't be afraid to ask your boss for a raise. This is a time where profits are quite high. So get a little moxie. Get a little group together to screw your courage to the sticking post. Raises are happening. Be careful with your health, even though if you're depressed and ashamed, kind of doing bad health habits is a way to go. This is a time to kind of really, really secure that, because that will save you money. Don't do anything rash about day trading or even trying to downsize now. That can be expensive. So hold the course.
Teresa, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you. And if people want to follow up with me, you can give them my email.
All right, we'll have that available for people to call in. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on retirement security, professor of economics at the New School in New York. When was the last time you had to get new wireless headphones? You might carry a cell phone around with you. How long ago did you replace that? Chances are they probably lasted for a couple few years, maybe five at best. Our next guest says that's because that's how a lot of them are designed to work. He's looked into the hidden death dates in the electronics we use all the time and why it can be hard or impossible to make those products last longer, even if you want to. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like your technology devices, your gadgets, don't last as long as they should? Were you surprised when the battery stopped accepting a charge like it used to could? Do you think they should be built to last longer or make it easier or even possible to replace those batteries? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page if you have a device with power to do that. Jeffrey Fowler is the Washington Post technology columnist. Jeffrey, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, hello.
What made you want to look under the hood on so many of these gadgets and figure out what was going on? They're incept dates, as they say in Blade Runner.
Indeed. So like millions of other Americans, I have a pair of Apple AirPods. And one day they started doing this thing where they went, anybody with AirPods knows the moment. That means that they're running out of power. And I noticed that it would, you know, it used to be that it would take, I don't know, a couple hours of using them to get to that moment. But, you know, at a certain point, I could just put them in my ears for like 15 minutes and I'd get to the doo-doo-doo-doo. And that meant the battery was dying. So I said, okay, fine. My office is near an Apple store. I walked to the Apple store. I said, hi, I'd like to replace the batteries in these. They were only about 2 years old. And the Apple store said, sorry, we can't help you. We can't replace the batteries in these either, but we can sell you some new AirPods.
Aha.
And I said, I see how this works. It turns out that AirPods are not the only product that millions of Americans use that were designed to essentially become trash over time. And as a consumer advocate, as a columnist for the Washington Post, that makes me kind of annoyed. That kind of makes me mad. It's bad for our wallets. And you know what? It's also, it turns out, really bad for the environment.
Now, there's two key things going on here. Now, a rechargeable battery, it is over time going to lose its rechargeability.
Yes.
But I'm not technically proficient. I have successfully changed batteries in many products in my lifetime. These products, you write, and many of them are designed so it's almost impossible to change a battery yourself.
Yes, exactly right. So look, it is the nature of the laws of physics that these lithium batteries that are rechargeable only can be recharged a certain number of times. That's known as the cycle count. And they're all born with a cycle count. And after you burn through it, they just aren't good anymore. What isn't up to the law of physics is what happens to these devices after the batteries wear out. They could be designed so that you pop open the back, put in a new one, and go on about your merry way. The problem is the electronics industry has, for the last 10, 15 years, been increasingly sealing these batteries inside products. In the case of those AirPods, the little tiny batteries in them are literally glued in to the sticks at the end. I mean, I actually, because I'm kind of crazy and it's my job to be a little crazy, I actually tried to open them up. I got like the world's tiniest little scalpel, like I was doing brain surgery, and tried to get the battery out. And it was insane. There was no way anybody was ever going to get those out because they were stuck and there was so much glue. And my question is, why are they designing these products this way? That's essentially forcing us to keep upgrading.
Now, you reached out to a bunch of companies and you looked at a lot of their products. You didn't hear back from a lot of them. Did anybody offer a justification that says, yeah, we need to glue these batteries in because what?
Yeah. I mean, so yes, I took a good 14 or so of the gadgets that I own with batteries, and I tried to figure out what is the death date in each of them. And to do that, I tried to get that cycle count number and then ask them, you know, hey, how can I replace the battery when this is done? As you said, many of them did not either answer my questions or gave me kind of like word salad answers instead of real answers. Some of them tried to defend the practice. And the most common defense I heard was, oh, well, these have to be sealed inside so they can operate in wet environments. Heard that from Philips, the electronic toothbrush, the Sonicare maker. Or that, you know, our devices are so tiny that they, you know, that this is the only way to put them in. But you know what? Pardon the pun here, but that argument does not hold water. And I'll give you an example of how it doesn't. One of the most popular makers of cameras in the world is called GoPro. They make those little action cameras that you see like surfers use. Well, guess what? They're used by surfers, so they can literally go for a swim. And yet every one of them has a battery that can be popped open. You can take it out, stick in a new one, and go on about your merry business. And so it is possible to design devices so that we can take the batteries out. It's just more trouble. And it just means that they have to maybe be a millimeter thicker. And the electronics industry just has not had the incentives to do that for us.
We're talking to Jeffrey Fowler, Washington Post technology columnist, looking at death dates for a lot of our electronic gadgets, a lot of things that are scheduled to become obsolete because their batteries are going to die and they're designed so you can't replace the battery. He tested a whole bunch of different ones. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a gadget that isn't recharging anymore? Do you wish you could replace the battery? Do you have questions for our guest about his research? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Melissa is with us now in Dubuque. Melissa, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have one that it's not battery related. It was an update that forced my tablet to just stop working properly. And it was like forced through. So
how old was the, it was a tablet you said, how old was it?
Yeah, it was maybe 2 years old. So it wasn't that old. I took good care of it. It had a case. I don't remember ever dropping it. So, and it was just that one update that got forced through one night. The next day, it did not work right. The keyboard wouldn't open up. Apps weren't running properly. And so I pretty much just had to replace it.
Melissa, thanks for the call. I feel like I've encountered this over the years. This is a different problem. Jeffrey, have you seen this kind of thing?
Yeah, I'd be really curious to know from Melissa what the brand was of that tablet.
Are you still there, Melissa?
Yeah, can I say it on?
You can, sure.
It was a Google Nexus.
Okay, Google Nexus.
Yeah, very interesting. So look, software updates are another way that that companies try to force obsolescence onto these products. Now, some of it is necessary. Look, they're constantly discovering new security bugs and problems with devices. And so it is, you know, good for everybody to, when they offer a software update, to take it. The problem is, how long do they continue to support older devices? And Google's Android devices have been a little notorious on this front for not supporting older hardware. 2 years is a really short window. Mm-hmm. Normally, we're talking more like three or four or even five. So another thing that we really ought to, we the users ought to demand from these companies, is that they continue to provide software update and security patch support for these products for at least five, maybe is it too much to ask for 10 years? Come on, guys.
Melissa, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Now, you, as you mentioned, tested a bunch of different items, got to their long-term recharge life. Were there particularly egregious ones, you thought, Jeffrey, ones that you were particularly offended by their lifespan and unreplaceability of their batteries?
Yeah, you know what? I went around and around in circles with Philips, the Sonicare toothbrush maker. So here's a product that, like, more Americans have electric toothbrushes than have iPhones. So these things are really common, but it is pretty hard to find ones that are, you know, these big brand names like the Sonicare that don't have this battery completely sealed inside. And I asked Philips, okay, what can these things take? And they said, oh, about 200 or 300. I was like, that's a very small number of times you can recharge it. And they said, oh, well, you know, it'll last up to 12 years if you only charge it once every 3 weeks. But who does that? I mean, most people I know, maybe I'm strange, but most people put the thing back in the charger every night. And so, you know, I've not had a Philips Sonicare toothbrush that's lasted me more than a couple of years ever. So I just think that they, you know, and it's particularly ironic coming from Philips. You know, they're a European company, and Europeans take their environmental commitments much more seriously in general than American companies do. But here's a company that, you know, has been, you know, making these sealed in batteries for years. I'll give you an example of how silly the design of the Sonicare is. So it's very dangerous to throw away a product, put in the trash, a product with a lithium battery in it, because it can explode if it gets punctured or bent or something. So they actually had to include instructions with the Sonicare that if you ever want to recycle or throw away your Sonicare toothbrush, officially, you're supposed to take a hammer to the back of it and then put it in a vise and try to yank out this battery, which has been soldered inside with metal. It's just absolutely insane. Why would you design a product that's supposed to be used by hundreds of millions of people that way? It makes no sense.
We're talking to Jeffrey Fowler, technology columnist at the Washington Post, about his Gadget Graveyard, a project looking at how long many of our electronic devices last, why it's hard to make them last longer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you felt money, like you wasted money having to replace a whole thing when you should have been able just to replace the battery? Have you tried to extend the life of a cell phone or tablet or electronic toothbrush or you name it when it gets old instead of getting that new one? Call 800-642-1234. Should we have more access to repair these things too? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the hidden death dates in our cell phones, laptops, our electric toothbrushes. Jeffrey Fowler has been looking into this. He's the Washington Post technology columnist, and you can join in with a gadget story at 800-642-1234. Have you been frustrated by having to replace a gadget of some sort because the battery stopped recharging and wondered why you couldn't replace the battery? Our guest wondered that too, and he looked into it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Gary is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Gary, hi.
Hi. Hi. Years ago, I had some chargers for batteries for like electric drills and things like that, DeWalt, and I forgot, there's a couple others. Anyway, I took it to a little repair shop in Marshfield, and the owner of the shop said, there's a special screwdriver. It looked like a Phillips head, but it has a little, I can't think of it.
The gist is, you could, if you cheated a little bit, you could make a repair, Gary?
Right, right. You could unscrew the screws that held the charger together. And I did that. And when we got inside of the battery, there's a little tiny fuse, a little round fuse that's got metal on each end and glass.
Gotcha, Gary. Gary, thanks a lot for calling in. So, Jeffrey, it's frustrating. Like, even when there is a solution, you kind of have to cheat and figure out workarounds to fix something like Gary's drills.
But you know what? I love the spirit of what Gary has to say here, because honestly, is there anything more American than being able to open up and tinker with the stuff that you own, right? I mean, like, people do this with their cars. We used to do it with our radios and our televisions and all kinds of stuff. But part of what the electronics industry has done over the last, again, you know, 10 to 20 years is make it seem almost forbidden to open up our stuff and make repairs on our own, or even take it to a local shop to have it repaired. And again, this is an intentional strategy on their part, because they either want to control the repair themselves so that you pay them more money, or they just want to keep you from repairing it so they go get you to buy something new. And I think that is bad for consumers and it is bad for the environment.
Thanks for that call, Gary. I want to ask Jeffrey, before we go back to our callers, I asked for sort of a worst of the worst. Are there companies, you mentioned GoPro is one, are there other companies or products where you thought, yeah, this is how it should be?
Yeah, you know, some of the big names have gotten a little bit better. So let's take the iPhone, for example, from Apple. So as I said earlier, Apple did a real number on us with the AirPods. But with the iPhone, it has learned the lesson. And now if you have a battery in an iPhone that is no longer very good, you can take it to Apple. You can take it to a store, you can mail it to them, and for $69, they will replace the battery in it. And that could give your iPhone another 3 years of life. And I think that is really good. And that should be, you know, basically every company ought to have some kind of service option or plan like that. But unfortunately, they don't.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jack is with us in Spring Grove. Jack, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? You know, I work from home now, especially during the pandemic, and I keep my my so-called mission critical laptop in a metal case when I'm not using it, because we have cats that get into things. And when I'm listening to you guys online or whatever, I use an older laptop that is just kind of a wasted one. And I had this this Acer Cloudbook. It was a very thin, very light thing with a very big screen. It was originally designed mostly for schools to use, and I took off the Windows operating system because it wouldn't work anymore. It was too underpowered, and stuck on a Linux operating system, and it worked just fine. It used to have a battery capacity that would go 10 hours because it had a big, long battery someplace underneath the keyboard. And eventually, of course, it began slowing down, and now it doesn't hold a charge at all. And it is literally impossible to, number one, open the thing up without ruining the case, and number two, if you were to get it open and didn't mind duct taping it back together or something, you can't find a battery for it. It's a battery that is as wide as the laptop is and very, very thin. And it's a shame because this thing ended up in a landfill. And that's my one beef. And I could talk about how expensive digital cameras are lower resolution, and they're only worth $20 now when they were 1,200 10 years ago. But that's a whole other topic.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. Jack worried, and you are too, Jeffrey, about, you know, these things ending up in landfills. A lot more waste than we, strictly speaking, we need to have.
Yeah, such a really good point. Jack, if you haven't yet, check out a repair community online called iFixit. That's where people with gadgets who are, into the idea of opening them up post advice for each other and instructions. They even sell some replacement parts. So there may be a chance that they have some instructions or even that battery that you need there. Another thing that is just on the verge of happening in the US that is good news for people like you and me is that in the state of New York, the legislature just passed a law that would give us the right to repair our devices. And what that means is that companies would have to begin publishing instructions for how to open that laptop up and get the battery out, and also sell replacement parts. So maybe you could get that battery. So things are moving in the right direction on that front.
Jack, thanks a lot for that call. We're looking at the life and death of a lot of our electronic gadgets. Jeffrey Fowler is with us from the Washington Post. Back to your calls now. Bob is with us in Prairie du Chien. Bob, hi.
Hey, I got two, actually. Cell phones are one of them. It's like they every 3 years, it's like the batteries start running out, the memories start running out, and you know, it's like time to replace. And also hearing aids. It's unreal. A friend of mine has a daughter that has hearing aids. She's all the way through school, and it's like every 2-3 years, they have to replace them, and it's very expensive.
Bob, thanks for the call. Now, I know they're going over-the-counter hearing aids now. That could be a big change. But, Jeffrey, that's a key product for a lot of people, a hearing aid. I don't know. They are expensive right now to replace.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that a medical device didn't have a replaceable battery. I know, you know, with other ear devices like those AirPods, you know, there's been the argument that they needed to seal it in there to make it fit in a small space. However, there is another good counterexample to that. Samsung makes some totally wireless AirBuds that compete with the Apple's AirPods, and the Samsung ones you can pop open and get the battery out. So it is possible to do even in very small spaces. And, you know, in Europe, they're actually considering now laws that would require the makers, the companies making this stuff, to make the batteries accessible and removable. So, you know, if these companies won't do it on their own, at least the Europeans might force them to.
Thanks for that call. Bill joins us now in Madison. Bill, hi.
Hi. A great one, coming from a family where you always try to fix stuff first. My brother Jim owns a house on the west side and has a Sears garage door opener put in when the house was built in 64. And the remote control wasn't working. So he took it apart and was just sitting at the kitchen table with a screwdriver. It was solid state, trying to move a couple wires. And then all of a sudden, boom, the garage door's working. And he just put it back together, you know, and ever since then. And then same thing with the motor in there. It was something just tinkering around up in there. And he's got it all. It's been fine. And so it's the same it's the same opener, same remote control since 64.
Wow. And knocking on the door of 60 years old there, Bill. Is there something to, they don't make it like they used to, Jeffrey, in the way they design these things?
I think so. Nothing makes me happier than hearing stories like this. I mean, how awesome does it feel when you're able to fix something on your own? You know, do it with some kids. Do it, you know, like, everybody should, we should change our relationship with these products in our lives. We've allowed companies to make us think that the only thing we can do is spend more money with them. And, you know, that's really not good for us or for ultimately for the economy or for the environment. I know we haven't talked too much about that yet, but like if the alternative is throwing this away, sticking it in a landfill, you know, every time we buy something new, we are making another huge hit on our climate crisis, right? Every new laptop puts a couple hundred more pounds of carbon into the air. And you know, that is just not sustainable for our planet, even if these companies want it for their quarterly earnings.
Jeffrey, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You bet.
That's Jeffrey Fowler, technology columnist for the Washington Post. He was with us today to talk about his look at the hidden death dates in the electronics we use every day and what it would take for companies to make their products last longer. You could follow his reporting, see which devices are designed to die or designed to be repaired. Follow his reporting at the Washington Post. And if you still have a story to share with us, you can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org.